Eric Basir.
I am known as a full-time temporary flagman. It is actually a part-time job. It's full-time in that I can be scheduled up to 40 hours. This is organized by Transit Workers United, so it's not a committee or officially endorsed by our locals. However, our goal is to unite all of the union members that work for the CTA and PACE to be active in their locals and to be a part of their locals and to guide and direct their locals. So today, the main goal is to connect the public and our coworkers in a mutual understanding of our needs out here. Especially, this is the last year of our agreement. Our agreement with the CTA expires. Our last raise was in July. And we have many issues that we need to resolve so that we can continue to serve the public in a dignified way.
Speak to some of those issues that you want to resolve.
So one of them is to lower the threshold of the part-time positions out there and replace them with full-time opportunities. In the very least, for example, a flagman such as myself, give us a minimum of hours per week. Sometimes we languish with a lot of furlough, unpaid time off, because there's just simply not enough workers or projects out there on the right-of-way for us to protect as flagmen. And that's what we do. Our job is essentially to make sure that workers who are on the railroad right-of-way are not harmed, and we do various tasks to ensure that. Right now, some of us are only getting 10, 15 hours a week. Now, the pay for flagmen is actually was negotiated at a very good rate, but it kind of gets offset when you don't have the work. And that's not necessarily the fault of the CTA. But what we're asking our union and the CTA is to sit down and work out a fair revision, a fair update to our agreement so that we could do other things. A lot of our operators on the trains are absolutely overwhelmed. You'll have one operator responsible for 8-car train all the way from Howard to 95th, all the way from O'Hare to Forest Park. And somebody says, hey, in the 8th car, I left my phone. As per the rules and as per our customer service, we have to stop the train, go 8 cars, walk through 8 cars to go look for a phone that hopefully wasn't picked up. Same with little incidents with our doors. It's a constant drive where our train operators are overwhelmed and their security is compromised as well. Flagmen are ideal helpers in that regard. We could not only protect our workers on the right-of-way, but we can protect our operators. And all flagmen, as per our agreement, have to take train operator class to become certified to be train operators. So it would harken to the days of conductors. And the riders want this. They want to feel safe. And that is one of the number one principles of the Chicago Transit Authority is safety. So this is a perfect opportunity to make part-time work fine. If we're not going to be full-time for now, well, let's at least have more hours so that we're compensated.
Has insurance and other benefits that a full-time worker would receive?
So we have different classifications of part-time. The part-time customer assistants and bus operators, for example, are eligible for a part-time tier of family or independent health coverage. However, when you become a flagman, because we all generally start out as customer assistants or we're hired off the street, or bus operators, we go into flagman, all of a sudden, we have no health insurance. And if we had dependent health care, that's gone. Where actually, when you become a flagman, your pay really bumps up nice. But what happens is that particular flagman doesn't qualify for Medicaid. And that particular flagman, if he or she has children with chronic illness, has to come out of their pocket hundreds and hundreds of dollars. We have one flagman, one co-worker, she pays $500 a month for asthma medication for her child, you know, out of her pocket. And it hurts. And she is responsible for an 8-car train and responsible for protecting workers on the right of way, because when you're a flagman, you can also be a qualified train operator. So you have a big responsibility. So the CTA has been turning a lot of us over to full time, and it's good. But, you know, we just need to do a little better.
What does a train operator make?
If you come in, as most of us do now, as customer assistant, flagman, and then if you get that train qualification, you're still a flagman. You're going to get a $2 bump approximately. So if you're at 21, or if you're, let's say you're at $20 an hour as a flagman, you're going to get 22 an hour as a train operator. You'll get more passengers.
I often see people thanking the bus drivers and thanking the train mentors.
And we appreciate them. Me, personally, I love customer service. I'm decorated with the Presidential Commendation in Customer Service. One of the that's a hard commendation to get at the CTA, I can tell you that much. The president of the company. Yeah, only awards it to a few every year.
Okay.
And for a part-timer with very few years on the job.
How long have you been on the job?
It's coming up to a year and a half now.
Oh, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm a baby out here. But I take it seriously.
Yeah.
I do. I take safety seriously, I take customer service seriously, and I think that as a union member, we're obligated to try to work also to make sure we get a really good agreement. I think the most important thing at this juncture, though, is to let the public know what we're going through, because if the public knows and the public understands, and basically that means the public is going to have to help pay. Let's look at our janitors, for example. Our janitors on the bus and the rail side, they get a small voucher, about $100 and something for the year. They have to wear uniforms, and a janitor will go through a pair of pants in one day, depending on the spill they're dealing with, right? So that type of thing, you got to triple that, quadruple that, you know, so that they can be in a uniform. Because so many of our janitors,
uniform alliance.
Yeah, our janitors and our carmen, our bus mechanics, our rail train car mechanics, are paying out of their own pockets to get the clothes they need, the uniforms, and just to get by. And we get a voucher, but then we, you know. And on a flagman, by the way, we have no voucher. So we wear out our boots on the right of way. All part-timers, rail and bus, have to pay for their own uniforms.
Okay.
Until they're here for a year.
Yeah.
And a coat will cost you about $100.
You address that if you have any thoughts.
Public transit is, the funding for it is woefully inadequate. You know, we're lucky, you know, the CTA will get new buses, new stations, extending certain lines, but we also need the workforce, the workers, and that is part of it. So that has to be part of this funding. And when we have more of these buses and these trains, for example, our trains, this is something really interesting you should know. We have three types of trains out there. It's called the 2600 model, the 3200, and the 5000. The 5000 runs it has an alternating current motor, an AC motor. The others have DC. But what's so ingenious about it is the electricity that's pulled in and used, and then when it stops, it breaks, that electricity goes back into the system.
Like as a Prius.
Exactly.
Reverse.
Regenerative.
Right.
You know? And it saves a lot of money, on especially with fossil fuel pollution, because we have to take 12,000 volts DC, convert it to 600 for our third rail, right? Our buses, same thing, working on that kind of thing. But we really need the public to understand that if we are going to preserve our planet, we need public transportation, a robust public transportation system, not everybody in an Uber. And that's the other thing. If we make sure our transit workers are full-time, the part-timers we have in our agreement, we're allowed 25%, won't have to do that ride-share stuff. Because almost every part-timer I know is also doing Uber. So they're wearing out their car, doing Lyft and all that stuff, that rideshare, you know. But when they turn over full time, they don't have time for that and they don't bother with it. They don't need it. So we really need the public to understand. We need funding, all right? And we need to work with the Chicago Transit Authority and PACE to make the pie bigger. Because the pie is kind of small right now, and a lot of us...
Where does that funding come from? Is it state?
We fare box and yes, taxes. That's essentially it. The taxpayer and the fare box. It's basically another tax. And so we have issues, you know, like what you know, Eric Slater is talking about, how the bus operators are obligated to ask for a fare, and a lot of people are so down and out, it's actually humiliating when you keep saying, fare's 225, fare's 225, and they're sitting there getting angry with you. I don't have 225, you know, and we let them go. We're not police. We can't enforce it, but it puts our operators, our customer assistants, and our bus operators in a difficult situation.
My name is Eric Slater. I'm one of the founding members of Transit Workers Unite. We're a group of transit workers that are both in unions. A few of us are not in unions, but we support strongly our unions. We're trying to encourage those unions and the workers in them to work together to go public and to win some of our demands. We're here at a CTA rail station, also a bus depot on the north side of Chicago. And this is a lot of the buses out of my bus garage in North Park come here on this work location. So some of the divides we have are between rail and the bus, between maintenance and frontline bus operators, men and women, black and white. All those things are dividing us. And we're an organization which is explicitly trying to unite us among transit workers in our issues, which are together as a group. I'm a bus driver, a bus operator for 13 years now. For informational purposes, I'm a shop steward for the last 5 years. And, you know, that's why I'm doing this. This is very important work.
And what do you intend to accomplish?
This is our second event that we've done. We're trying to do this every month. We did the last one in the Loop of Chicago, where we're trying to encourage rank and file workers to speak out. We're trying to encourage our unions to mobilize our members, not just active members, retired members, people who've been unjustly fired, that we're a huge force, tens of thousands of workers in just Chicago alone, and that's just among the CTA workers. If you don't know that transit plays a role in your life, go without it. Try a couple days, like New York in 2006, without public transportation. And if they keep on messing with us in the city administration, then they're going to have to learn the hard way of what it's like to not have public transportation. So what we're trying to do is build up to a point where we're respected and treated with dignity so that we don't have to use that. We don't have to remind them how important public transportation is.
And who in the city is responsible for working with you to make sure there's an equitable contract, and who decides what's equitable?
Well, in my opinion, it's the members of the unions that get to ratify a contract. In the end, it's got to go through us, the members who discuss and debate and to vote eventually on a contract. And if they don't respect us, then we have to prepare for battle against, as the Chicago Teachers Union is doing right now.
Who is the they you refer to, and what's their connection to the mayor?
Well, the Chicago Transit Authority is run by basically some bureaucrats that are appointed. They're not elected by the population. They're certainly not people who are directly experts of what they're doing. So who are the experts? They're the people driving the bus, the maintenance workers, the rail workers, the track men and women. They're the people who take safety extremely seriously. We're not only experts here of public transportation, we're also leaders of communities and leaders of family back at home. And those are the people who are not making the decisions. So when I say they, it's the Chicago Transit Authority Board, it's the Regional Transportation Authority, it's the city administration, it's the government of Illinois, et cetera, that make these decisions without us, on our backs, over against our will, often.
Is their primary concern the efficiency of the transportation, or do they have another kind of concern?
Yeah, so what do we see? What we call pick. So I'm in shop steward, so I help workers pick their runs and schedules and where they want to go. It's based on seniority. What we see is a shrinking of our working environment. So we see a speed up of the work. Many workers see this, but we literally see it, a speed up on these buses. I was just talking to a worker. We're here at the Howard Terminal. The 22 Clark comes out of the street, and we don't have proper bathroom facilities at the South. We don't have enough time to be able to use the bathroom. They're squeezing, and so that's what we feel. Month after month, year after year, a squeezing of these working conditions. So it's very hard to do things like safety, which is number one, right? We do an amazing job, no doubt about it. Courtesy and kindness towards the public and the passenger. When you feel squeezed and run race down that street, that's what we see as their priorities, not the safety of the public, the working and living conditions of the actual experts who do the work. That's what we see on the ground level. Of transit workers.
At the end, there's no place to take that bathroom break?
Yeah, at the South Terminal, it's crazy, in the center of Metropolis, we don't have that. I mean, I'm the steward at the garage. We were talking with management a couple weeks ago about it. We're having this continual problem. But what's really going on is a lack of control. So the people who do the work are not making the decisions about the route, about how much time is at the end, where it goes. It's not the public. It's certainly not the experts, the people who are doing the work. And that's the main problem. So that's why you see these atrocious things. That how could this possibly happen? That you have a bus operator who holds 100 people's lives in their hands, going through the center of the city, right? With all these, you know, taxis. Like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. It's inhuman, and it's also a tribute to humanity that we're able to do it. But, you know, over time, you know, I've been doing this 13 years. People have been doing this 20, 30 years. It beats your body down, and they just throw us away like badge numbers. And that's what we're trying to get out to the public. This is not necessary. This is a public service, and they should be treating us with respect and dignity.
How could they have more input into that? The public?
Once again, we hear from the public directly, especially the frontline. You know, not all transit workers are direct frontline workers, but as bus operators, we're directly talking to passengers every day. And, you know, in many of our experiences, yeah, there's some people that are difficult, but many people are thankful and appreciative, or at least respectful of the hard work that we do. We get a lot of difficulty, but there's many, many people who give us respect. So that's just happens directly, but there's no organized way of doing it. You know, in my opinion, we should start to be organizing the unions to be able to receive those phone calls. Right now, the Chicago Transit Authority or the government offices will get it. And if you're lucky, if they really know their bureaucracy, maybe a formal commendation can come in. But we get thousands and thousands of commendations from passengers in just a few years, and we might get one or two. Now, they're certainly ready to fire us very quickly if someone didn't like us, right? There's so much racism, sexism that we have to deal with on the bus as frontline transit workers. And a lot of the frustration, many of them legitimate, of the passengers get on, and you know, when they see something they don't like, they call in on us, and management's very clear and very fast to go after and threaten our livelihood over that, and oftentimes without any evidence. So that's a major concern we have. And you know, we want to ask the passengers and the public, instead of coming after the frontline transit workers, try going to the union. Try speaking directly to the workers' organization. Especially, you know, maybe have a community meeting with, you know, the leadership or the ranks of workers and say, hey, this is some of the problems we're having. How can we work this out? As opposed to trying to get that worker fired. And you don't understand what that worker's dealing with. You don't understand that he hadn't had a pee break in 2 hours. You haven't understand that or she has children at home and management's forcing them to be at work even when they're trying to help their family, which is many of the conditions. I'm a shop steward. I see this every week. Where a leader of the family, men and women, they have family obligations to their elders, to their children, and the management says, well, we have an absenteeism problem, so we can't give you a day off without pay, or we, you know, They've made it so that only four misses within a year time. Imagine that if you're a minute late, 60 seconds late, four times in a year in your entire career, every year, they're going to try to fire you. And thousands of workers have been fired for this issue, which has nothing to do with safety, right? I know, Eric, I want to bring you in for a moment here, but what the passengers care about, what the public cares about, safety, making sure that these trains, which show 1,000 people on them, the buses, each of them have sometimes over 100 people on them, and they treat us with such disrespect in the garage. We need some more respect. So that's why we're out here trying to do this public campaign.
The safety. So one of the biggest safety issues for trainmen, the people that operate the trains, is dealing with what's called disturbances. And that's a mild word for shootouts, arguments with weapons, being threatened, with their lives being threatened. It's very hard to get security on time because we have to be on the move. We have to run the trains on time. And sometimes what happens is the way our trains are constructed, to maximize getting passengers on them, the area where we operate the trains is also open to the public on the rear car. So if we're in the head car operating the train, the area where we operate is partially open to the public in the rear car. The rear car is a place where a lot of people relieve themselves. You'll find drugs back there, food back there, all kinds of garbage. It's very unsanitary and smelly. So when the operator has to take the train back the other way, they have to deal with that. So yes, we have car servicers that will help mop it up, but even they are dealing with other messes. So it's not always easy to get done thoroughly. The company has a process for cleaning the entire train from top to bottom. Sometimes that, for budget cutting reasons, isn't done enough. And so our passengers will complain about foul odors as well as our operators. So if you're part-time, you're stuck at 32 hours, but you can do overtime over that as per our agreement. If you're full-time, you're definitely getting your 40 hours and more, especially in scheduled operations, bus and rail.
Of course, it's straight time.
It's straight time. So your 8 hours, your 9 hours, you're going over that eight isn't overtime, but your 40, your total, right?
Yeah.
then it's an overtime.
This is true on many workplaces, but many of the issues that basically they're cost-cutting measures. They're running the transit agencies as a for-profit or a company. And so they're coming out of business school and squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. But the problem is that's not only hurting our life and our families, it's also hurting the safety of the public. And that's one of the main things we're trying to bring attention to and encourage other workers to speak out in an organized fashion to do so. You know, for instance, we're talking about one of the main problems for on the bus side is the scheduling. And if they don't give enough time at the terminus, the end of the bus, then that means that you're going to have a very tired driver. You're going to have someone going trying to go faster and faster just to make up that time. And they'll be cutting corners. They'll be running through red lights. They'll be here at this terminal right here. We have a major problem where there's a global positioning system in space that is coming down on each one of these buses. And there's a quote, we call it a bubble. A circle around this terminal. And if you pick up somebody here and they're like running down here from the train trying to make a connection to the buses, like, wait, bus driver, wait for me. But you're like, if I get more than 30% late within a two-week period, they're going to give me a procedural violation. And a procedural violation can really quickly march up to firing you. So you are pit against the passenger who legitimately just wants you to slow down and stop for a second and pick them up. But you're like, sorry, I can't. You know, the bus is in practice making us be not only unsafe, but often discourteous. What appears to be discourteous, you're looking the other way hoping they don't see you. You know,
it's the same thing on the rails.
Yeah. Yeah. You see someone coming like, hey, you know, if I don't, if I stop and pick you up, 1,000 people or might have to wait. But not only that, I may not get a break at the end. And I need that break. It's a human need to be able to just cool yourself down, right, and be able to not think about the extreme complexity, extreme danger that you've just gone through safely and well and with courtesy, and then get back, get your head straight and ready to go and to face with people with a smile, you know? It's something that's needed for safety. And I just say another thing, it's related to safety, is time off. We're leaders of families. We have children, or if we're older, we have grandkids. We're almost everybody who's making this union job is protecting a family, leading a family. So we have obligations to do that. It's out of property, and oftentimes the transit authority, again, to save, quote unquote, save costs, they do not give us the time off that we need in terms of personal break. Like, you're dealing with an emergency in your family, and they don't have the time for you to say, either get here or we'll find somebody else. And at a certain point, that impacts the public directly.
You talk about the requirements, for example, a driver.
The question is, what is required of, I know as a bus operator, but transit workers are different. In Chicago, you're required to be 21 years or older. You're required to have a commercial driver's license, pass some exams. You're required to have a Class B air brakes endorsement, passenger endorsement. You have to have a driving abstract, which is your record of driving, and you have to pass a whole lot of background checks, drug tests, all kinds of things. We are the cleanest of the clean. And then once you get hired, you're in a 5-month probation. 3 strikes, you're out, right? It's like being in prison. It really is. For 5 months, and if you survive that, it's like basic training. And it really feels like a combative environment. And then, of course, you're on, at any moment, you could get drug tested. Right? Someone hits your bus. You didn't do it. Right? And they say, well, we're going to have to do a drug test for you because you were involved in a collision. And so it's just the amount of, okay, there's 13 cameras on the bus. 13 cameras on the bus at any moment. There's a server rack behind the bus, which is like the size of a major grocery store or city block, on each one of these buses that are surveillancing not just, of course, us, but the working class communities. They're pointed outside the bus, inside the bus, directly at the face of the bus driver. Also, the rail workers have the same thing, a camera facing you all the time. So we are among the most surveillanced people in the world, in my opinion. And we do it amazingly.
Can you talk about what are the demands that you want? Because your contract expires at the end of this year, right?
Correct. December 31st.
All right. So what are you looking for?
Okay, so contract negotiations haven't started yet, and they should shortly. My union has not yet compiled a formal list of our issues, but I can just informally talk about that. I'm not trying to say I speak for everybody. Maybe you can also talk about some of the things, the concerns. The previous contract, we did this survey, and I'm pretty confident a lot of them will be the same. It's time off, personal days. We have a sick book policy, but you get disciplined when you get sick. For no fault of your own, that needs to be a lesson, perhaps a policy which is less strict about what we call misses. So if we had a tardy policy, any of these things to allow us to have some more time to just concentrate on safety, not all this other stuff, this bureaucracy that supposedly saves money. One of the main things that we're concerned about is safety as bus operators, and obviously also train workers and maintenance workers. Is safety with dealing directly with the public. In my view, some of the directly related to that is the fare. So as we talked about earlier, we're required to request the fare through our work rules. And this puts us at odds with someone who may not have the fare. And this sometimes can create violence. So it's directly in workers' interest to work with passenger groups, community groups, and everyone who gets on the bus to lower the fare. And that's something that we can have as a demand as our union to be in solidarity with the people who get on our buses and trains. Many other issues. One, of course, is the scheduling. We can contractually get more control. Right now, I'm a shop steward, and I help the workers to pick their runs every season. And as many people take public transportation will know, the schedule changes on a seasonal basis. So we schedule that, but or we work the work, but we don't make the schedules. So the Chicago Transit Authority doesn't even give the schedules to the union until a week before we actually pick. So instead of that, the reverse could be possible. The reverse is where teams of workers working with their union, with passengers and the public, can do their routes. So we're looking here at the 22 Clark or the 147 or the 201 here. The workers have been here for a couple years. Why aren't we the ones who make the schedules? Why don't we meet with the public directly and decide how frequently the service, how far it'll be, how much time between the buses, the details which only we are experts as. It's the frontline workers and the passengers are the only people who really know the streets. And we're the ones who should be making the decisions. So those are some of the demands. Of course, health care, I can't go without mentioning that. We had massive increasing of our health care costs since the 2012 agreement. You know, you think you get a salary that's this much, but it turns out that by the time you've dealt with all of your expenses, you're really not making much more than any other worker in the city. Another issue I would bring up is what we call swings. Many of the workers, especially here on the north side where I do my work, a lot of workers live on the south side or the west side. And so they have a long commute in their private cars to get to their work location. They have to be on time, like I said before. But once we get there, we may get a three-hour shift or we may get what's called a swing shift. And we have to sit in our car for maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, 9 hours. We've got a car, some people don't, in the parking lot, maybe with the air conditioning on, in the extreme cold, the heat, and hopefully sleep in our car, and then get back on one of these buses.
Is there no facility for transit workers to wait until their shift start?
So at the 7 CTA bus garages, and I believe this is also true for the Pace Suburban buses, which we see a few here at this that are going north into Evanston and Skokie, they have what you see back here, which is a break room, which is similar to the rail workers. We play games, we watch TV, we socialize with each other. It's like we eat our lunch together. But, you know, at a certain point, you need to rest. You need to be in a bed. You need to be with your family. And sometimes the stress, it's good to be with your coworkers, but sometimes you got to be away. And that's not a rest.
So there's no place to take a nap?
I have not seen one. There might be something on the rail side,
There's plenty of research coming out on the benefits of even a 15-minute ability to lay down, take a nap, and the positive effects on both the health of the individual doing it as well as their ability to perform the work that their employer is trying to get out of them.
I got 2 1-year-olds at home. They sleep a lot, and there must be a good reason for that.
Okay.
No, it is. It's very dangerous. So we had actually on the Blue Line, and maybe you can talk about this, a few years back, we had a rail car that ran up onto the airport area. And fortunately, no one was killed. But many were questioning the amount of sleep that operator had. And it led to some changes in the amount of time. But still, as we speak right now, you get a minimum of 8 hours to get off your run, which may be at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever, go home, get your uniform off, rest, right? Try to, you know, get your mind away from all the stuff you just did at work, and then get back in time to be able to get to work at least a half an hour early. Because if you are not trying to get there half an hour early, you're going to get in traffic or whatever, and you're going to get a miss, and you're going to get fired really quick in this company. So you may have 4 hours.
How many employees fired for those misses?
Well, over the last 5 to 10 years, the Chicago Transit Authority has taken on a lot of the management techniques in for-profit companies. And they said, this is the new CTA. And they went on a war against the workers for what they call absenteeism, excessive absenteeism. And so what before, you know, I started about 13 years ago before this turn. And what would happen is, you know, I would call the garage, I'd be coming a few minutes late maybe or like that, and I'd call the clerk and I'd say, hey, I'll be right there. And it's a 10-4, As long as the bus is coming out at the proper time, you know, obviously, you know, you don't want to do this all the time, but it was a little bit more respectful, and the people were able to treat us with respect. And now it's all done with computer systems. You have to tap your badge, and this no wiggle room for the necessities of home life, of your family life. There's no about the emergencies that you may have, or even if you get, you know, literally, if you get your car banged in on your way over here, and you come to the manager and say, hey, I got a police report, doesn't matter, it says here in the rules, even if it's not in your fault, even if it's not your fault and you can prove it, we can still discipline you for that. And they're going way overboard. It's thousands of workers who've been fired.
It's a neoliberal approach that extracts the humanity out of the relationship between the employer and the employee.
Right, and it's not good for humanity to do that. And frankly, I see a lot of people driving really dangerously. I would rather have my professional bus operator or my professional trained motorman handle that in this very extreme conditions in the city, especially.
The time on the bus especially is a time for people to decompress. Some people read, they look at their phones.
Yeah, well, just when we had the extreme polar vortex, what did we call workers called for and the city administration partially reacted to is send the buses to go to places where people were freezing to death. And we do that all, you know, all over the place. When we have mass demonstrations or mass parades and something, they put a whole bunch of cooling buses. So these are places where people can, and unfortunately, because of the massiveness of homelessness in Chicago, many people have no place to go other than the trains to ride back and forth. There's hundreds and hundreds of people that are on the trains because they have no place to live, and it's temperature controlled, it's cleaned by professional union cleaners. Yeah, and that's a social crisis that I don't think should be resolved in public transportation. But this is something that we are right now providing. You know, many people get on my bus. And when I started on the west side, people would get on the bus and ride both directions. And I would be like, okay, well, maybe I'd ask the fare once. But if someone gave me a hard time on the bus, they'd say, don't mess with my bus driver, you know, because this is where they lived, on the back of the bus. So I think we need to fight for the public transit as a part of the commons, as something all of us have. It's not just this for-profit thing where they can just squeeze from us.
Can you say your name?
Yeah, Eric Slater, E-R-E-K-S-L-A-T-E-R. I'm a bus operator for 13 years now, and I'm an elected shop steward and executive board member for the Amalgamated TransUnion, Local 241. I don't speak for any other of those organizations, the CTA or the ATU. I speak for myself.